Chapter 10, The Barbecue. It's the day of the barbecue. The sun is shining and Zoe is preparing food. She's really pleased with herself as she feels really organised for once. She'd spent the whole of the previous night cleaning the flat and did a crack of dawn trip to the supermarket and deli, where she had an order of special breads and their signature hummus, tzatziki and enormous bowl of olives. She has piles of meat marinating, steaks, a T-bone for Miles as is all he will eat, chicken breasts, lamb chops and sausages for the meat eaters. She has skewers of vegetable kebabs, falafels, halloumi and veggie burgers for the vegetarians, and some salmon and tuna steaks for the pescatarians. She has a large plastic bin full of ice and bottles of beer, wine and soft drinks for the little ones. She's prepared pitchers of Pimm's, which are full of fruit, and cucumber waiting to go. She's satisfied that she has met all the culinary preferences. Even vegans wouldn't go hungry. The only thing she had forgotten was to ask her mother to make her a gluten-free cake, so she'd bought another one in the supermarket for Emma and her intolerances. She set up some small foldaway tables and chairs on the small roof terrace, which is accessed via the kitchen, and added some fairy lights around the plant pots. She has her sound system up and is playing her favourite tracks from the playlist she's made up, including Billie Holiday, Frank Sinatra, Amy Winehouse, Nina Simone and Aretha Franklin. Mitch is happily bathing in the sun watching her. She's a little nervous because she wants everything to be perfect. She wants to make sure she gets as much done as possible so she can keep an eye on the family and not be too caught up with the food when they get here. By 1 o'clock, she's well and truly ready. When she looks around at the mountain of food, she's really hoping they all show up. She realises it's time to get ready, so she heads for the bathroom. She has plenty of time, so she runs a bath and pours herself a large glass of Pimm's, reasoning that she has to test it before the guests come. And she deserves it. The combination of Pimm's, lack of sleep, and the essential oils she dropped into the bath have a soporific effect, and she soon nods off. She's woken by a knock at the front door. She grabs her phone and is horrified to discover it's 2:30. She's praying that Emma hasn't carried out her usual and irritating habit of coming early. She has. She runs to the door in her towel, dripping wet. The look on Emma and Miles' face says it all. No amount of preparation, hoping or well-executed planning will shift their negative perception of her. And she's just given them all the fuel they need. Miles, in particular, has always believed she's scatty and away with the fairies. Her dripping, bathrobed appearance is just adding weight to his argument. He wordlessly hands her two bottles of Veuve Cliquet. Thank you, Miles. Very generous of you. But can I leave it with you to put it in the fridge? You know where it is. He sighs and takes the bottles back. She is mortified and just wants to get some clothes on. She kisses them each on the cheek, kisses the children on top of their heads and races to her room to get dressed. Why don't you all head up to the roof terrace and help yourselves to a drink? Everything's ready. Emma and Miles give each other sideways knowing glances, as if to say, yeah, right. They are fully expecting to be greeted by chaos. Where can I put this, Zoe? It's a really good year. We don't want it quaffed like cheap Prosecco, Miles adds before he heads to the terrace. They're actually pleasantly surprised when they see how good everything looks and how ready she really is. They settle themselves on one of the little tables and Miles sets about opening one of his bottles. The children are given glasses of water and told to sit down. Zoe leaves them to it and runs to her room. She pulls on some underwear and slips her dress over her wet hair. Just when she thinks it can't get any worse, she hears a scream. She races barefoot to the kitchen and is confronted by Emma pointing at Mitch, who's covered in barbecue sauce, a large T-bone steak hanging from his mouth. A large dish of marinated meat is scattered all over the floor. And that, my dear, Miles says to Emma righteously, is why we don't have a dog. Zoe groans. They both look at her expectantly, waiting for her to reprimand the dog. Mitch, how could you? Look at the mess you made. Go to your bed now. She points to his dog bed in the corner of the room. Mitch lowers his head and looks suitably ashamed for a moment, but he takes the large steak with him. His tail is wagging as he goes. The children are delighted to see him, and he them, and so they run to pat him, but Miles yells at them to leave him be. He doesn't want them spoiling their clothes or encouraging that dog. He insists they go and sit down and behave. Reluctantly, they leave the dog and go and sit down. Grace pulls a book out from her mini rucksack and gives Raphael his iPad. He's been given dispensation to play on his game because Miles is worried that he'll run riot if he hasn't got something to distract him. Behaviour control being uppermost in his mind, rather than educational value at this point. Zoe takes a deep breath and tries to compose herself. I have plenty more. No one's going hungry. Miles, I have more steak. It's not T-bone, but it did come from an organic butcher. And the sausages and lamb chops are organic as well. Miles sighs and looks at his wife. Well, I guess that will have to do then, Zoe. I'll manage. Miles looks at Emma as if to say, I told you so. Is there anything I can do to help, Zoe? She says helpfully. Thanks, Em. You could get the oven going and get the garlic bread in. I just need to finish getting dressed. I'll be right back. With no time to put on her makeup and do her hair, and the time she'd like, she goes straight to the shortcut version of getting ready. She scrapes her hair up into a ponytail, adds a little mascara and some lip gloss, and heads straight back out. She throws on a pair of flat sandals instead of her newly purchased glamorous strappy heels, as she's given up on the idea of trying to impress anyone, especially her brother-in-law. She finds Emma wearing a pair of rubber gloves she managed to find under the sink, wiping up the barbecue sauce from all over the floor. Zoe, you need to buy some more Viacal and some antibacterial spray. I couldn't find any anywhere. Zoe fails to mention that she never buys these things. She prefers the old-fashioned vinegar and bicarbonate of soda and fairy liquid as her go-to cleaning agents. She's saved by another knock on the door. This time it's her parents. Her mother smiles and hands her two large cake tins, one labelled gluten-free. Zoe kisses them both and ushers them inside, determined to hide the cake she bought that morning. George asks where he should put his crate of beers, and she sends him to the rooftop, where Miles is sat with the children, a glass of champagne in hand. He and George shake hands, and they make polite but empty conversation about the only four topics the two of them feel safe to discuss: the children, weather, traffic, and sport. Usually rugby, rather than George's preference, which is football. They avoid politics, religion, and money. George lights up when he moves his focus onto the children, finding their company much more preferable. He sweeps them up and tickles them until they squeal. Miles looks on disapprovingly. He doesn't like to see the children being so stirred up. But the children adore their grandfather and his playful attention. He tucks both of them under an armpit each and swings them round. With a stern look from Miles, they both settle back onto their chairs and resume their books and games. George sighs. He thinks children should be allowed to be children, but he has to respect Miles and his way of doing things. Pam, Emma and Zoe are in the kitchen. Zoe pours them all glasses of Pimm's. Oh, Zoe, you've gone to so much trouble. The place looks lovely, her mother says. Yes, Emma says, but points to the red goo on the floor. Although luckily we arrived when we did or the dog would have eaten it all. Miles always says that dogs don't belong in flats. They're so unhygienic, messy and noisy. Emma brushes away some dog hairs from the chair before she sits down for a minute. Zoe turns her back and pulls a face, admonishing herself for forgetting to hoover the chairs during her mammoth clean-up the night before. There was always something, and Emma would always find it. She couldn't win. Mitch is usually so good. That's not like him at all. I wonder what came over him, Pam says. Mitch's ears prick up. He looks at them all from his bed in the corner. He's still gnawing his way through the bone of the T-bone steak. He hoped his act of rebellion would demonstrate his disapproval of Miles, and, to a lesser degree, Emma. They thought they were so much better than Zoe. But he knew better. He was just a little sorry that his actions had made a mess for Zoe. He hadn't meant to pull the whole tray down. He just wanted the T-bone that was destined for Miles. The three women clear up what remains of the mess. Zoe salvages what she can and grabs some more chicken pieces from the fridge. On this occasion, she's thankful for her habit of overbuying. This time it's definitely worked in her favour. The doorbell goes again and Zoe runs to the door. Letitia and Joe are there, both dressed stylishly and casually chic. Letitia in shorts and a loose linen top, with designer sunglasses holding her hair back. Joe wearing a short sundress and a white Panama hat. Both are wearing Brazilian flip-flops. They come with several large bottles of Prosecco and bags of goodies for afters. This is the first time they're meeting Zoe's family. They've heard all about them and are very intrigued to meet everyone. Zoe is really happy to see them. They grab some Prosecco and head to the terrace. Zoe introduces them, and Emma is the first to step forward. She greets them both with a double air kiss. Joe drifts off to speak with George and Pam, leaving Emma and Letitia together. "Hi," says Emma to Letitia. "So do both of you work with Zoe?"
"No, just me. Joe's my partner."
Emma looks a little startled.
"Oh, I see. Sorry. And what does she do?"
"Oh, she's a personal trainer. Yoga and Pilates teacher. I practice law. And she transforms bodies."
"Oh, yes, very good. I do an hour of yoga every morning once the children go to school. And Miles is really into fitness, so I have to do something."
"It must be great to have your own personal trainer at home."
"You'd think. Truth is, I can't be bothered. She does my share. I do a bit of walking, the occasional running, but I love dancing. That's my thing. Can't beat a bit of salsa and tango."
"I did 10 years of ballet. It was nearly enough to put me off dancing for life."
They both laugh.
They're interrupted by a loud banging on the door and someone yelling,
"Let me in! Let me in! Zoe! Zoe!"
A male voice and then peals of laughter. All heads turn to Zoe and she runs to the door. It's Rick. He is tall, slender, strikingly good-looking with longish dark blonde hair, sun-bleached at the front. He could easily pass as a surfer. He's dressed in skinny black jeans, a white evening shirt, and a tuxedo jacket. He has clearly not been home from the night before. He's accompanied by a tall, blonde, skinny, gorgeous model type, who could easily have graced the cover of any leading magazine.
"Oh, Rick, it is so lovely to see you. I'm so glad you could make it."
She turns to the girl.
"Hey, I'm Zoe. Lovely to meet you."
"Oh, great to meet you too. I'm Cassandra. I've heard loads about you."
"Even though I only met him 24 hours ago."
She laughs a little too loudly at her own joke.
And Rick laughs madly too. Zoe is about to offer them a drink, but thinks better of it when it comes clear that they are both very drunk.
There's plenty of food, guys. Make sure you grab a plate."
Thank you, I may have a little nibble on something later. I'm a vegan and can't do gluten or cooked food."
"Oh, what do you do then?" Zoe says, mildly concerned.
"I do the raw food diet," Cassandra says.
"That means she lives on celery and nuts, don't you, Cass?" She slaps Rick playfully.
"Looking good is actually my job," she says, pointing to her skinny frame. "So I have to take care of it, Zoe. Do you mind if I smoke?"
"Right, sure," Zoe says, smiling at the ridiculousness of that statement.
"On the terrace is fine, but not in the house, please. I'll get you an ashtray, but there's a couple of kids out there, so preferably not anywhere near them."
They're drinking from an open bottle of champagne and have several more in plastic bags, which they dump into Zoe's arms as they make their dramatic entrance into the house. They are in very high spirits. There's a drop in all conversations and all heads turn to look at them. George, on seeing his son inebriated and dishevelled again, as he usually is these days, is irritated by his presence again. At one point, he thought he could be gay, as he was so flamboyant. That suspicion was soon put to rest when Rick hit puberty and had a string of girlfriends. He notes the beautiful girl, but wonders how long she'll be around, because they're never around for very long. He knows his son's predilection for gorgeous girls, and would never admit to being jealous. It's not a conscious thought, but there probably is an element of it in there for sure. He can't help but wonder what they see in him. He just sees him as a waster. George ponders on his own life. He's only ever known one woman properly. He's never been unfaithful to her, even if in recent years he may have been guilty of a little neglect. He's only ever had 2 jobs and has always worked hard. He's from a lineage of working class men who take pride in hard work and family values. He thinks his son has none of this and acts like he's some kind of entitled superstar. George doesn't consider taking snaps of girls in silly outfits as a proper job, irrespective of how much money he makes. He does not approve. And even though George has been a steady drinker his whole life, he'd never dream of turning up drunk to a family party. That's against his code. He glares at Patrick. Pam, on the other hand, is always happy to see her son. She's really upset that he's turned up drunk again, and with a complete stranger, and despairs inwardly. She knows the conversation she's going to have with George later and hopes there isn't going to be a nasty scene. However, her emotions are completely masked as she greets her son with a hug and kisses Cassandra warmly in welcome.
Miles looks to Emma disapprovingly and is furious when the children run straight into Rick's arms. He picks them up and starts throwing them around. Hey, how's my gorgeous princess and my superhero warrior? He tickles them and they wriggle around in his arms, giggling and delighted to see him. He staggers a little and catches George glaring at him. He puts them down and begins to make his way around the room, air-kissing Emma, shaking hands with Miles, who's clearly not happy to see him. He's introduced to Letitia and Joe and bear-hugs them both. Cassandra remains on the other side of the terrace smoking, spigging champagne and enjoying the view. Rick finally approaches George and they have an awkward hug. Hey, Dad.
Patrick.
You good?
Yep. You?
Yep.
Good. Anyway, I better go. I got to check the barbecue.
He gently nudges Rick out of the way, and Rick looks disappointed. Zoe catches his eye and they both shrug. Rick makes his way to the kitchen to get himself a large drink, and George watches him disapprovingly. Rick catches him looking and it just makes him knock his drink back even quicker. He pours himself another, sees some shot glasses on a shelf, and yells out to everyone, "Who wants shots?" No one responds. He looks despondent and sighs. "Bunch of party poopers," he says under his breath. He pours himself a shot of vodka, necks it and disappears into the bathroom. He pulls out a little vial that's hanging from a chain around his neck, pulls a little spoon out of his back pocket and spoons some white powder onto it. He expertly snorts it up into his right nostril. He has a little snort on the other side too. Then he stands up, inspects himself in the mirror, making sure to wipe away any traces, and smiles, running his hands through his wild hair to tame it a bit. Come on, Ricky boy, you can do this. Round two, let's go. Meanwhile, outside, people are helping themselves to food. Zoe is really pleased as she's had lots of compliments, particularly about her homemade barbecue sauce. Well, what was left of it. She starts to relax and is really grateful that so far Rick hasn't caused a scene. Emma is being nice. Miles hasn't complained. And even Mum and Dad are smiling. All is well with the world. She downs her Pimm's. Letitia and Joe are deep in conversation with George, and she's delighted to see them laughing and happy. They know exactly how to humour him. She grabs another glass of Pimm's and heads over to Emma.
Everything all right, Zoe? You actually look like you have things under control. It's a really nice barbecue. Really neat and tidy. Well done.
Thanks, Em. I'm really glad you guys could come. It's so lovely to see the children. Anyway, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. So, any men on the scene? She asks.
Zoe shakes her head and sighs. Well, there was someone, and I did really like him, but it just didn't work out. Emma looks at her pityingly.
What happened? Oh, you didn't get drunk and mess it up again, did you?
Kind of. But this time it wasn't my fault. And anyway, I'm sorting myself out. I found myself a therapist, Zoe says quietly, so no one else will hear.
Emma is surprised and intrigued.
Oh? What kind? Well, I'm not really sure. She does a mixture of things. Letitia recommended her. I think it's going to be really helpful.
Emma whispers into her ear. Don't say a word to anyone, but I'm going to start seeing someone too. It's Zoe's turn to look really shocked.
Really?
What kind? Wow, I never had you down as a therapy type.
Well, she's a psychoanalyst, actually, Emma says. I can give her your number if you want to see a proper therapist.
But Em, I thought everything was perfect in your world.
Emma sighs and nods knowingly. Oh, it is, Zoe, but there are always things that can be made better. And I just want to make sure I'm the very best version of me. I owe that to the children and Miles. And I see it as the same thing as doing my Pilates. It's like doing yoga for the mind. She sighs and continues. And of course, you know, we've had a few issues with Raphael. That's been a bit stressful, if I'm honest. But I think we have his meds worked out now, and he is better. Not nearly quite so hyper. In that moment, the girls actually bond a little, their secrets creating a connection between them. They are unaware that Miles has approached and is standing behind them.
Mine's helping me to bring out my inner goddess, Zoe says with a cheeky smile.
Miles groans.
Was that really necessary, Miles? Emma says with mild irritation.
I just respond to what I see.
Emma turns away from him and sees her children jumping all over Rick, who's bouncing around on the floor. They are loving his exuberance.
Have you got presents for us, Uncle Patrick? Raphael is saying eagerly.
Oh, not this time, buddy, but I've got some great shit at home for you. You're going to love it. I was in Zambia on a shoot at a safari park. Did you see any lions and crocodiles and elephants and polar bears? Raphael can barely contain his excitement. He's always been fascinated with wild animals. I did better than that. I got to see one of the few remaining white rhinos. Children are very impressed. Tell us, what was he like? Gracie says. Ha, let me show you. Rick drops to the floor and starts making wild animal noises. He's on his hands and knees and encourages Grace and Raphael to get on his back. The three are racing around the terrace until Rick headbutts a table full of drinks, which comes crashing down on top of them. Raphael and Grace are covered in red sticky pims, and all three are laughing their heads off. Luckily, all the glasses are plastic, so nothing is broken, but the mess is everywhere. There's a stunned silence. Miles and George look livid. Miles drags the children off the floor, and George grabs Rick by the lapels, lifts him up and shakes him. What the hell are you playing at? You always have to ruin everything. Jesus, what's wrong with you? George says angrily. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I was just having a laugh. I'm so sorry, Zoe. I'm really sorry. He's devastated and is looking around to Zoe or anyone for support. All heads are down except Zoe's. She smiles at him sadly. It's okay, Rick. But it might be for the best if you go. I'll clean this up. Go home and clean yourself up. It's all right. No real harm done, she says. But I think it would be for the best if you go. She looks over at Letitia and Joe. They're smiling sympathetically. Her depiction of her family now well and truly verified. It's not long before they all leave. She and Mitch console each other on the couch. He's still chewing on his bone, and she's finishing off the last of the pims. Be a sin to waste it, she says to Mitch. He gives her hand a lick.